Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle. Hey everyone, this is Judy. Thank you so much for listening. Welcome to another episode. My conversation today is with Bonnie Ambrosi, and Bonnie is the organizer of the Duluth Vegan Cookbook Club. And if you're not familiar with it, it's worth checking out whether you are interested in vegan or if you're interested in healthy eating or just some different food ideas. It's a really great group, and we're going to talk about that. We'll talk about what a vegan is, Bonnie's history, and how she came to be a vegan, and various reasons people choose to be vegan. We touch on a lot of different things, health, of course, animal welfare, and environmental reasons are certainly something that many people cite for being vegan. One of the things that I love about Bonnie's approach is, and you'll hear this right away when she starts talking about herself, is that she is a very non-judgmental person about people's choices to be vegan. She definitely has a huge passion for why she is vegan. She also knows that everybody has their own journey and path, and she also knows that everybody's body doesn't exactly work the same or need the same things. So her philosophy of health and wellness definitely recognizes that. Her flexibility and non-judgmental attitude that she brings to the education that she does and to the Vegan Cookbook Club, I think, really are reasons why it's so successful and creates such a great atmosphere. I talk about my experience at the Cookbook Club within our conversation, but I wanted to mention this because I do think this is part of why the Cookbook Club is so intriguing to people of various ranges of where they're at with vegan food. If it's something you want to dive into heavy, or if it's something, you know, like one of the people who comes to the Cookbook Club, one of their relatives is vegan. So they're coming to learn what other options can we get, what can we cook while that person is at their house. The Cookbook Club is the cookbook club for many reasons, but one of them is because she didn't want to necessarily have a vegan club. Not that that is a bad thing, but the whole point of it is to be able to focus around the cooking and the food awareness. And so it really does bring in people who are, you know, 100% vegan all the time, and people who are, again, exploring for their family or do a few meals a week or whatever the case is. One of the other things that I think is also great about Bonnie is that Bonnie, for instance, doesn't spend a whole lot of time in the kitchen. She will talk about that. So the goal of the Cookbook Club is not to turn everybody into gourmet cooks. However, if you like to do that, I'm sure your family will be delighted, and I am willing to test your food out for you, no problem. Definitely willing to help. Gotta take one for the team sometimes, right? I've mentioned this before, but I want to toss it out there again. I myself don't have one particular diet that I am tied to. I have weird food issues. So for me, it's a huge exploration, as it is for many other people, in figuring out what works for them, what makes their body feel good, etc., etc. And I'm personally still on that search. I would love to live 3 months purely paleo and 3 months purely vegan and see how my body goes. I have experience in both of them, but I'd love to be able to really push it and see how I personally do. I love exploring these ideas, and I'm putting them out there so people who are interested or trying to figure things out can have some tools or suggestions or resources that they might be able to use for themselves to figure out what works for them. We're going to talk in the interview about where, when, etc. the Vegan Cookbook Club is held here in Duluth, Minnesota. And if you're traveling to Duluth and you're here on a Thursday, first Thursday of the month, feel free to check it out and come join the group. That would be fantastic. You'll find all that information in the show notes, as well as a couple links to newspaper articles, one of Bonnie's Vegan Cookbook Club articles, as well as an article actually on the Cookbook Club before the Vegan Cookbook Club article was a thing. That all being said, I hope you enjoy. Well, hello, Bonnie.
Hi, Judy.
Thank you so much for your time today. This is great.
It is my pleasure.
I want to start out by having you introduce yourself, who you are, what you do, and then we'll hone in on the vegan lifestyle.
What I do. I do a lot of things. I have been for about 30 years a yoga instructor, yoga and wellness instructor, so I do that. I'm a certified Ayurvedic health educator, so I write and teach about Ayurveda, which is a holistic health paradigm from the East. I'm an organizer for the Vegan Cookbook Club. I also do in-home care for the elderly.
Wow.
I cook, I garden, I raise kids.
Wonderful. Very well-rounded. Yes. Very well-rounded. That's awesome. I brought you here, I want to talk about the Vegan Cookbook Club.
Yeah.
For sure, because I think that there's a lot of people who might really, really benefit from that. But before we do that, let's dive into, first of all, what does it mean to be vegan and what's the difference between that and vegetarian? How are they similar and different? And then how did you get there for your personal self?
A vegan is somebody who doesn't use any animal products. So simple. That means no dairy, no meat, no fish. Sometimes people don't include fish with meat. So no dairy, meat, fish, eggs. Some vegans don't use honey either. So no animal products. Vegetarian is just no meat. A vegetarian will still eat cheese. Lacto-ovo vegetarian eat cheese and eggs. So that's the difference. A vegan doesn't eat anything that comes from an animal. My journey to being a vegan, you have to go back a long way. When I went away to college, I read a book by Peter Singer called Practical Ethics. And it revolutionized my idea at a point in my life when I was very open to being revolutionized, right? And then he also wrote Animal Liberation, seminal books. And I decided I'm going to be a vegetarian. And so my college version of that was milkshakes and french fries. but still, the seed was planted, which had not ever been there before, that I didn't want to eat meat. I grew up on a farm. We raised beef cattle on a small scale. We had milk cattle. We had chickens and all that. My family was very kind to animals. My dad did not allow hunting on his property, which was very unusual in that part of the state. Everybody hunted. Well, my dad didn't. But there's a disconnect between that and food somewhere, and I think that's so common. So I went away to college and it began to connect the dots. So then I was vegetarian for years and years. After having children, I began to feel uncomfortable using dairy just because being a nursing mother, it was so obvious who milk is for. Mm. The milk is for the baby of that mother. You know, cows do not actually produce milk for us.
Right.
They produce milk for their babies. Dairy farmers are not in the business of giving that milk to the calves, so the calf, you know, goes away. Mm-hmm. And as a mother, that made me very sad. And so I decided I wasn't going to do dairy anymore. I'd already given up eggs long before because I found that eggs make me angry.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Which is a really common response to eating eggs. And that's why if you go to an ashram, they won't give you eggs.
Okay. That's fascinating. I've never heard that before.
When I really landed with both feet in the vegan camp was 2013, I guess. I felt called to speak for farm animals. And that drew me into full-time, full-on veganism as well as animal welfare activism.
Okay.
That's
nice.
A long, winding journey, which continues.
Right. Interesting. The eggs and anger thing is fascinating to me.
Eggs and garlic are particularly known to, if you tend to have grouchy issues.
Okay.
It will aggravate that.
Wow. Okay. That's an interesting thing to pay attention to for myself and others.
Not everybody's inclined that way.
Sure.
But if you're having a bad day and your response is that it makes you really grouchy or irritable, then you probably would be sensitive to eggs and garlic.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Good to know. Hey, that could be like huge for people. My gosh. So one question that I can imagine coming up from hearing what you said, first of all, is, oh my gosh, all the food that you mentioned you aren't eating, what in the world do you eat?
Oh, yeah. And let me assure you, I eat a lot. I love to eat. I eat very, very well. I eat fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, basically, and also beans. And that may sound odd, but like for lunch, I had 2 apples with peanut butter and miso. I'll make salads with lots of stuff thrown in, nuts and beans. I'll have tofu, hummus, soups, stews, roasted vegetables, really good bread with vegan butter. I am well fed.
Yeah. Vegan butter. So tell me, just as I'm thinking through that, what does that equate to, like in a brand or...
My favorite brand is Earth Balance.
Oh, okay.
And I've heard a lot of other people say so too, but there are some other ones also. Margarine is not usually vegan, you know. I mean, margarine is not the same as butter, but
right.
Margarine usually includes some milk products.
Okay.
So vegan margarine or vegan butter does not.
Okay.
It's just plant oils.
Okay. And Earth Balance is quite good, I think.
Yeah.
As far as a butter substitute.
Everybody likes it.
Yeah.
It's good.
I appreciate you giving food examples because I think that's really helpful.
Yeah, I can give lots.
Well, and let's... Breakfast. So one thing that comes up when I hear people say, oh, I maybe could be a vegetarian, but what in the world do I eat for breakfast that isn't oatmeal?
Right.
And, you know, if they're eating eggs or whatever. So give me some ideas for breakfast.
Well, a lot of people feel good eating fruit for breakfast. It's light and it's easily digested, so you might consider, instead of having something really heavy like meat for breakfast, having a large serving of fruit. But if you want something heavier, toast with hummus is good, or avocados have that oiliness and that richness. Avocado toast is a great example. Again, spread some Earth Balance on there also, you know, nice big thick slice of artisan bread, toast it, spread half an avocado on there. That would be good. Scrambled tofu is super easy to make and is very protein rich. In other countries, it would be common to eat beans for breakfast. I don't think we've totally gotten into that in America, but refried beans on a tortilla for breakfast. Why not? Put on some vegan sour cream. I tend to eat really simple things. I actually don't do a lot of cooking where it takes very much time. So again, an apple with peanut butter.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Or an apple with hummus. Somebody came to a vegan cookbook club recently and said they'd read that in one of my columns, and now that's what they eat for breakfast every morning.
Mm-hmm.
And the fiber from the apple and the hummus keeps you full for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You've got some protein. You've got the phytonutrients from the apple. There's all sorts of possibilities. You can also... If you're just starting out to try to eat more plant-based foods, you can simply substitute. Use vegan bacon. There are more and more good plant-based substitutes that are a lot like the same thing. Do vegan vegan sausage.
Mm-hmm.
If you have sausage every morning for breakfast and you want to try to cut back on your meat, try a vegan sausage. Will it be exactly the same? No, but that's not fair to expect. You know, it'll be good in its own way.
Right. Well, and yeah, and it's expanding your taste palette
a little
bit and being open to, I'm always encouraging people, try something a few different times because your brain has to like work around what is it that I'm eating? I expect this sausage to be the meat sausage that I'm used to, but it's not. But your brain, and you kind of like have to go, okay, wait a minute, give it a little bit of time to go, do I even like that? And being open to liking it is helpful, but to not just kind of go that first instant is your end result.
Because it's different.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Our brains and our bodies like familiar. So you do have to give yourself a little bit of time to make a change.
Right.
But it's not hard. There's so many good plant-based foods out there.
You had one, I think it was you, and maybe I don't know that you remember this recipe off the top of your head or not, but there was one with chickpeas that was a breakfast that people were doing.
Scrambled chickpeas?
Yeah. So was that just literally mushed up chickpeas?
Yeah, basically.
Okay. So open a can, throw them in the...
Yeah. You can mash them a little bit with a potato masher so you don't just get the whole chickpeas. Mash them up enough and then You can just heat them up and splash some hot sauce on it. Again, this is really good on toast if you want, if you eat bread. If you don't, you know, just have them as is or with rice. You could add some extra vegetables or put some green onion in there.
Right. Well, and there's a whole plethora of grains, too, if somebody mm-hmm. eats grains.
Right.
You know, with quinoa and amaranth and
right.
all of these other things. And a lot of resources, like you said.
Absolutely. Oh, tons of resources. So the Duluth Public Library has between 150 and 200 vegan cookbooks on their shelves. So if you like to read cookbooks, which a lot of people do, check mm-hmm. some out and get some inspiration. It's fun to look at other ethnic cuisines, particularly places where they naturally don't use meat very much. And that way you're not just trying to substitute, but you're cooking from a perspective of, like, who needs meat? You know, look at all these wonderful things that we do. For, like, Indian cooking or Asian cooking can be quite authentic without animal products.
Right.
And, of course, online. Just more resources than you could look at in a lifetime. If there's a recipe that you particularly like, a favorite thing that you like to make and you don't know how to make it vegan, search online. One of our cookbook club members said, you know, just look online. Some genius has figured out how to make this vegan. Probably several geniuses will all have posted their versions. So I think a sense of adventure, it takes you a long way. You know, explore, try different things. It will be good for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. You know, you can be sure it may not always turn out exactly the way you expect. You might have some surprises, but it'll be good for you.
Right. And talk about that a little bit, because we have so many diets in the world right now. And I know that your paradigm are very understanding that not everything works for everybody.
Yep.
But kind of go into the whole idea of having the mostly plant-based diet.
I like Michael Pollan's advice, which is eat food. It should be recognizable as something edible. Eat food, not too much, mostly plants. I mean, this is something that's doable for everybody. I'm vegan, and I don't see myself ever going back, but that's not going to be the path for a lot of people, and it doesn't have to be. You can get a lot of the health benefits, which are substantial, from a vegan diet, just by moving in that direction. So if you see the spectrum of being a standard American diet on one end of the spectrum, which is very animal product heavy,
mm-hmm.
to vegan at the other end, you know, just move along that spectrum a little bit towards the plant-based end, and you will see benefits. So it does not have to be all or nothing. And even among vegans, I don't think there's probably any two who have exactly the same diet.
Mm-hmm.
Some will be really big on raw foods. That's a diet that works great for some people, not great, can be a disaster for others. Different constitutions thrive with different sorts of diets. You know, some people like to spend a lot of time in the kitchen and will make elaborate dishes and really enjoy that. That's not for me most of the time. Occasionally, yes, but most of the time I like something that I can make in 5 minutes,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Some people need to eat often, other people not so often. So we all find our way. But in general, I think there's plenty of science to back me up on this. A diet that is mostly plants is extremely healthful.
And the mostly plant, I mean, again, like you say, people do their diet differently. So you've got the people who, they're mostly plants really are focused on the vegetables and the fruits. And then other people who the plants include more of the greens and, you know, those kinds of things as well. There was the idea of different things working for different people. There was an article in Time magazine, I think it was last summer, that was looking at which diet is the best.
Oh, and, impossible.
Well, and that's exactly what they came across saying, which was basically the diet works for you. You have to try different things mm-hmm. to see what your body wants. And then there's the what your body wants and then what you can sustain to do. You know, like you said, some people love being in the kitchen. Bless their hearts. I wish I lived next door to them because I love home cooked food. Mm-hmm. I have a super tiny kitchen
mm-hmm.
and storage is an issue. But love the really good food. And yeah. You got the next person who can do amazing, amazing stuff with, like you say, very little time and just throwing stuff together. I know from being at the Vegan Cookbook Club, I remember there was a lady there who like didn't make the same dish every day. And I'm like, wow, that's tenacity. I mean, what a gift to herself and her family for...
She was just exploring veganism.
Yeah.
She was new and this was her way to explore.
And that's very cool. And you know, being your motivation, everybody has a different motivation. Right. And what keeps them going. Well, and because I, you know, some people it's the animal welfare, some people it's the health, some people it's I need to see what's working for my body. I'm thinking that's where the Vegan Cookbook Club can be really helpful for people to be able to explore those different, everybody's coming with a different motivation and then being able to find the support and the information that they're looking for from each other.
Yeah.
So let's go into the Vegan Cookbook Club. How many people, like how big of a group is it typically?
Well, it's, we never have exactly the same group twice, which is cool. And we've never yet had a meeting where we haven't had at least a couple of new people. We'll have 10 to 25 people, I'd say, come. It's a monthly group. It's the first Thursday of every month. We meet through the summer as well, from 11:30 to about 12:30 at Mount Royal Public Library. And it is the Vegan Cookbook Club, because I wanted to make clear that it's not a vegan club. You don't have to be a vegan to come. In fact, a lot of people aren't. But there's people who are interested in learning about vegan diet. Vegan, so we can talk about and share ideas from vegan cookbooks. People come, I would say, we have more people coming for their health than for any other motivation. I think that's very powerful. We're all motivated by our own well-being, right? And so there are some really inspiring stories of health journeys that have come out of the Vegan Cookbook Club. But I know people there are also interested in environment. It's another strong motivator. And animal welfare. And many of us are motivated by all three of those. So it doesn't have to be just one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
We've been meeting since December of 2016. So we've been going on for about a year and a half.
Nice. I can speak from personal experience that it is a very open group of people. It isn't about pressure. It is about exploration. I mean, there are multiple people there who say we don't eat vegan all the time, but we have, you know, I don't remember if it was a day or two a week or a few meals at least a week. And that's a great way to get into it and explore it, because you don't, it's not that huge pressure of massive shift in your world, but it gets you to find a few things that you can be excited about and integrate.
Yep. It's a very diverse group too. We have men and women, all ages, from retirees, working age parents, you know, we've had a few college age students, very different backgrounds. And what brings us all together is our interest in vegan diet, whether we're doing it full time or, you know, and have been for years, or are new to it, or are just trying to find out what is this, or my grandson is a vegan and when he comes, I don't know what to feed him. You know, there are all sorts of reasons that people come and we learn from each other. The idea that different diets work for different people, I think, is important for understanding why there's not just one vegan diet. But I will say something that's a little bit different about a vegan approach to diet than you might have, say, with some of these others, is these additional layers of significance, where vegan diet is really environmentally significant, which a high or low carb diet isn't necessarily. You know, you're not necessarily doing that to save the planet. And it's becoming now a little bit better known that factory farms have a devastating effect on our environment, as polluters of water, air, and soil, and generators of massive amounts of greenhouse gases. So for many people, this is the easiest and most direct way to have a personal effect on the climate. And if you feel passionate about trying to save our planet's climate, it's such a huge issue, and so many of the drivers seem so far removed from us. It's like, what can you do? Ah, here's something that I can do right now that will make a difference. So there's that makes this approach to diet a little bit different. And there's also the ethical dilemma of how we are using animals. And that was my main, and still is my main concern, that between, I think I read the figure, 95 to 98% of the animal products that are consumed in America come from factory farms. Yes, there are beautiful little farms dotted around, and if you drive through Wisconsin, you see them. But that's not where most of the animal products come from. We're lucky to live in a place where we can get local eggs, you know, local goat's milk, cheese, etc. But that's not where most of it is coming from. And if you go to the grocery store, you know, they're from factories. And the animals in those factories lead hideous lives where the best thing that happens to them is when they finally are killed. And it's not necessary. We not only do we not need that to be healthy, it's making us ill. It's bad for rural America. Factory farming has had a devastating effect on rural farm communities by taking the ownership out of local small farmers' hands and putting it in corporations. And it's bad for our environment. So this lends a kind of a moral heft to vegan diet that other diets don't have. And it may help to explain why vegans, especially sometimes new vegans, are so evangelical. Mm-hmm. I am determined not to be that way. But you can see why, because once you get all of this, if you could make one lifestyle change that would have tremendous health benefits for you, would benefit public health, would be good for the environment, and would save billions of animals from suffering, why would you not do that?
Right.
It's like, well, of course. And the answer is habit. The answer is habit. Habit is like gravity. A habit is the gravity of the character. You know, it's hard to change our dietary habits. Mm-hmm. The other gravitational pull is economics. Factory farming is a huge economic driver. That doesn't mean it can't change.
Right.
Things do change. In fact, things always change. The question is just how long will it take? An example of a societal change that has happened within our recent lifetimes is the attitudes towards smoking.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. We grew up, I'm older than you are, Judy, but we grew up watching cigarette commercials on TV. Mm-hmm. And I know when I would go into a restaurant as a younger person, or it was like smoking was mandatory. If you weren't smoking yourself, you know, the person in the next booth was.
Right.
And that has so totally changed.
Yes.
And it's not that nobody smokes anymore, but the cultural paradigm has shifted, and I don't see it shifting back. And I think something like that is in the process of happening with our attitude towards animal foods. That is shifting. There's a lot of data there on trends and, you know, public opinion and all that that shows that it's really moving away from being big on eating animal products, and it may not ever shift back. Mm-hmm. Things change. Sometimes things go away and they never come back. Talking about a pan-cultural practice that has gone away. How about slavery? Mm-hmm. Which existed from ancient times up until not that long before our times.
Right.
It
true.
Is, I mean, it's so gone, you can't even imagine.
Right.
It went away because the paradigm shifted. Paul Harvey says history is a series of emancipations. Just kind of cool. I like to think of it as the circle of who matters continues to get bigger.
Uh-huh.
More people are inside. In the West, for a long time, the only people inside the circle of who mattered was noble men.
Right?
Right. Everybody else was outside the circle and didn't matter. And think of all the different groups who little by little have been added in. Women. Oh.
Women just a little group.
But they weren't inside the circle for a long time. And unless you go way back to like Celtic culture. But, you know, so they have property rights and they can vote. Children. Oh, you mean child labor laws. And they deserve an education and they deserve to have real childhoods. People of other ethnic backgrounds. There was a time in our country not that long ago that Irish and Italian people were persona non grata. Now that's So, okay, all right, you guys, you matter too. Okay,
right.
How about African Americans? All right, they matter also. Slavery is out. People with disabilities matter. Oh, pollinators matter. endangered species matter. But for each of these, there was a time when they didn't.
Right.
When they didn't matter, they were totally outside the circle. And if you thought of them at all, it was only as a resource to be exploited. And in each of those cases, bringing them inside the circle required years of advocacy by people who were willing to try to swim upstream. And then at some point, the paradigm shifted. Enough people got it that very quickly, cultural ideas about what was appropriate changed.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that every bad thing goes away, you know, that everyone respects women or that, you know, that no pollinator will ever be abused. But the paradigm shifts. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's happening right now with attitudes towards factory-farmed meat and eggs and dairy.
Well, there's so much more awareness of what's actually going on. And I know some people who are, they're not fully vegetarian unless they, if they know where their meat comes from and they feel like it's been a humane source, then they will eat meat. But other than that, they do not. So it's kind of, they're moving in that direction too. But we're so disconnected from our food and so many things have happened behind the scenes and that continues to be the case and we're so protected from that, which...
Protected is a euphemistic word.
Right.
We're trying to protect you from knowing what we're doing.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And that protection doesn't help. That protection doesn't help the ones being abused in the little farms. Because it's so much more prevalent, even just the awareness of how many places will have a vegetarian option.
That's right.
Or, you know, I know when I was at UMD, we were discussing food. And at the time, it was people with celiac were needing some options. And they're like, well, we can't provide kind of the concern about can we do this for everybody? And somebody brought up and said, you have no question about having a vegetarian option. So can we just extend this a little bit kind of thing? Because we're seeing obviously that come into play too. So,
yes.
But it is getting easier for a vegetarian to eat out, I would assume, and just much more options and more creative options. Some of the foods that weren't typically kind of available in restaurants are now, people are getting more creative in using that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's funny when you're talking about the motivations, I think it is really important to point out the environmental, all of those pieces, because it is a very important piece that I think is many times forgotten. And I think of the comedian Jim Gaffigan. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's got this whole, he does a lot of comedy about food. And one of the things he talks about is, you know who's obsessed with meat? It's vegetarians. In the whole duplicating the bacon, duplicating hamburgers, you know, trying to have a vegan hamburger, a vegan bacon. And I think that that is a point when that comes up, because that does come up for people. It's like, well, if they're trying to stay away from meat, why are they?
Okay. This was a topic at one of our recent vegan cookbook club meetings. So, yeah, people who aren't vegan sometimes seem to think that if you go vegan, it's because you don't like the taste of animal products.
Right.
It's like, no, I don't think I've ever, maybe I've heard one person say, no, I've never liked the taste of cheese or meat. It's like, that's not it. It's for health reasons and ethical reasons. But if you can make something, if you love burgers and you can make a really good burger that is not made from an animal, but tastes great, like, why should you not be able to do that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any hypocrisy about that at all. It's not about taste. It's about eating food that's good for you and good for the planet.
Right.
It's like, make it taste like whatever you like, whatever you want.
Right.
People don't generally become vegan because they don't like the taste of animal foods.
Right. Well, and it's something you know what to do with. You know what to do with a burger-shaped thing. You know what to do with a bacon-shaped thing.
And those are called analogs, too. And I don't use them much myself because they tend to be pretty highly processed. But it's nothing new because seitan, for instance, which is made from wheat gluten, is an ancient food that its other name is mock duck. You know, I mean, so the idea of making something that's like meat, but making it out of plants goes back to ancient times. So this really isn't anything new.
Right. And sometimes you wonder if it wasn't intended to duplicate me. It was just the thing they ate, but then somebody discovered that it kind of duplicated me. So, right, exactly, exactly. Okay. You talked about the health benefits. Share what some of those are. Yeah, for people of what people, what do people experience when they do go vegan, be it part-time or full-time?
Yeah. Okay, I'll speak just a little bit from my own experience and from the cookbook club, and then I can read you something from Dr. Michael Greger, who is a really well-known and respected advocate for a vegan diet. What I hear from people who've gone vegan is they almost invariably lose weight, even if that may not be their main reason for doing it, but it works well for them, and feel generally lighter and clearer. You don't have to eat animal foods to be a good athlete. I'll tell you, there's plenty of websites that show that plant-based diet can fuel big muscles and very fast runners and whatever athletic skill you do fine with plants. Yeah, let me read you here what Michael Greger has to say. The health benefits of, and that is of a vegan diet, are clear. People who eat fewer animal products have lower rates of obesity, dementia, arthritis, high blood pressure, kidney disease, gallstones, hemorrhoids, constipation, diverticulosis, and appendicitis. People who eat completely meatless diets are half as likely to be hospitalized or require medication, and they're less likely to need emergency medical procedures. Meat-free diets are even being used to reverse chronic diseases, opening clogged arteries, curing type 2 diabetes, and alleviating obesity. Plant-based diets may also boost our longevity, he goes on. And there's tons of science out there. You can pick any specific on that, but it's really good for you. It seems that we thrive on a diet that is mostly plants. Again, it doesn't have to be 100%. It seems to be really good for you. It's really good for you.
Well, and even that focus, I mean, granted, everybody comes, I'm sure, from a different place of how whole their diet is. You know,
right, that's
I mean,
true.
Not everybody comes to being a vegan from having a really American
right
diet, and they're seeing improvements,
right.
You know, and then for some, if you can just focus on having a healthy, my gosh, 2-3 meals a week, a healthy vegan diet, for some, that is that just that little focus can be really huge for for some people. And also when we switch and we start to learn about things, we get excited and we get focused, and you always learn something from trying different ways of eating, and there's such great experiences to be had in that, and exploring our food, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very fun thing. So much to be learned about our bodies and ourselves and how we respond to food.
Yeah.
So, yes, I do want to hear about how you got into animal activism.
Okay, I'll tell you. So I mentioned briefly, you know, in 2013, I think it was when I experienced my entire life, what I would call a calling. And I had almost a continual thought coming up or feeling that I needed to speak for farm animals. And this just started at one point. I'd been vegetarian for years and years and years and basically knew the story, but was quite content to let everybody do their own thing. I knew enough about factory farming that I didn't want to support it, and I really didn't want to know any more than that.
Mm.
And then I just began to have a feeling, I don't know, that I needed to do more for those animals. And then it seemed like every scripture reading, every sermon at church, newspaper would have some article that would remind me these animals need an advocate, need more advocates, need me to be an advocate. But I really did not want to do it. So for almost a year, I resisted, and it made me unhappy. I would, you know, walk through the meat section of the grocery store and burst into tears. So finally, on January 1st, so New Year's Day of 2014, I relented. Okay, fine, I'll do it. I will speak for farm animals. I don't know who's going to listen to me or what I'm going to say, but I'll do it. And there was such a sense of relief and also empowerment. And I found very quickly that I was then able to do the research that I needed to do to educate myself without having nightmares because I was doing it in order to accomplish something.
Mm-hmm.
And opportunities to speak came up almost immediately with very little effort on my part. And I did a lot of speaking and writing in that first year, just on my own. I educated myself and people listened to me. Some of the things I talks I gave were amazing. I gave a class at Whole Foods Co-op called CAFO 101. And people signed up for it. who would do that? So over time now, I've refined my approach so that it's not quite so hard on me and my audience. And now my main way of working towards those same ends, but it much lighter, is through the Vegan Cookbook Club and by writing a monthly recipe column for the Duluth News Tribune. And I always include some little fact at the end about veganism. And hopefully it's moving the paradigm in the same direction, but with somewhat less of a heavy toll on our emotions. I would say everybody needs to know at least a little bit about factory farming. If you can still eat conventionally produced, industrial produced animal products, you don't know enough, right? You don't have to know everything. You don't have to watch every nightmare video there is, but you need to watch enough that you don't buy that stuff anymore. And that's my story. And it continues to evolve.
Right. I know one thought that came up just as you were talking about the animal videos, and I had to watch Food Inc. over and over and over and over and over again. And I just, for some reason, all of it is frustrating, but where they take the chickens and they pour them on the conveyor belts, it just makes me crazy.
Yeah.
I can't watch those. I can't handle it. And I'm like, yeah, they watch little cows and their little faces and, yeah.
Well, hopefully within our lifetimes, those beings, also those creatures, will find their way to the inside of the circle.
Mm-hmm.
So they also will matter. Right now, for most people, for our culture, they're still outside the circle.
Mm-hmm.
But that circle keeps expanding.
Right.
And I could imagine someone saying, well, so we can't eat, we can't abuse farm animals, pets matter, wolves matter, pollinators matter, the climate matters. So, well, what can we abuse? what can we treat without thought? Nothing. Essentially, in the end, everything matters. We're getting there. There is one other thing that we could touch on if you wanted, and that is a faith perspective on this.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Unless you're a Seventh-day Adventist, you're not required to eat a vegetarian diet. But for many people, there can be a faith aspect to diet as well in a couple of ways. The main thing is stewardship. It comes up a lot, and stewardship of our planet. And so then you start to really look at the environmental impacts of industrial animal farming or factory farming. And so that can be a way that a person's faith brings them around to a more plant-based diet, because it's one of the easiest ways to take a personal stand for the good of the planet. But another aspect that I've talked about a lot is mercy. Most spiritual traditions, not just the Christian tradition, but the Judaic tradition as well and others, value the quality of mercy. It's a quality that's attributed to God and that we are to bring out in ourselves as well. And Aristotle said that people develop qualities of character by what they do over and over and over again. In other words, you don't develop a quality of character by reading about it or by thinking that you should be it. If you feel that you are called to be merciful, you don't get there by just thinking, I should be merciful. Merciful is good. but by doing mercy. One of the best opportunities to do mercy every day is by what you choose to eat. And you can exercise your power, your responsibility, and your opportunity to be merciful many times every day by choosing to eat food that is not the result of hideous animal suffering. Mercy is defined as showing compassion for those over whom you have power. Mm. We, as consumers, are in a position of power over those animals, whether we don't realize it most of the time because we're at some remove and we don't see them.
Right.
But they are there because we buy those products. So we have power over them. So that's to be merciful is to have compassion for those over whom you have power. The opposite of merciful is ruthless. And the root there is a word that's almost dropped out of our modern language, but it's still in the dictionary, and that's ruth. Ruth is compassion for the misery of another. To be ruthless is to have no compassion for one who's in misery. But ruth is to see another's misery and just let it break your heart open. And so in that way, a vegan diet or a diet even that's mostly plants or that is compassionate even, you could be a compassionate omnivore and just be eating your own eggs or local mm-hmm. eggs, whatever, can be very spiritual. And it can be very much a part of your faith as you grow into the quality of mercy by doing it every day. You become merciful by doing mercy. And what better way than with your diet? Jonathan Safran Foer, who wrote Eating Animals and Everything is Illuminated, said this, and I wrote it down so I'll get it right. One of the greatest opportunities to live our values or betray them lies in the food we put on our plates.
Well,
yeah.
So if somebody's looking to explore this diet for whatever way, you know, for whatever length of time, if it's a huge change or a trial, from my own experience, because I've been to the Vegan Cookbook Club multiple times, it's a great place to go because it isn't, if somebody is intimidated or you've had the experience of a very excited and motivated vegan in your space.
In your face.
In your face, too. That can be very much, for some people, you know, it's sort of a turnoff. And I would highly, highly, highly recommend go check out the Cookbook Club because it is a great place. And there's just so much. The conversation is fantastic.
We laugh a lot.
Yes. And it's just, and the stuff that comes out of it of just fun health conversation and little awarenesses and the little pieces that people have been learning and share and the little tools that, like you say, the simple things to make cooking easier, to make snacking easier. I mean, those are great for anybody eating ever.
You're right. Wherever you're at on your journey, you will be welcome there.
And so I highly recommend it. it's a great place to be. But yeah, omnivores or non-omnivores, come on down. So you said that it's on the first Thursday of the month at the Mount Royal Library. And there's a little room off to the side.
Yep. 11:30.
And it lasts for how long?
An hour.
Okay. So check it out.
Yep.
Bring your questions and... Yeah, it's a great group of people. So do you guys do anything else? Do you do any, like, field trips or anything like that?
We've only done one field trip so far. It would be fun to do more things outside of our monthly meeting, and I think we may grow into that,
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is wonderful.
Very fun.
All right, and that wraps it up for today. Thank you so much for listening. Please check out our other podcasts at wellnessrenpodcast.com. You can also find them on iTunes. And if you go to the wellnessren.com website, the main website, you will see a podcast tab. So there's lots of ways to find the podcast. No excuses at all. If you like what you hear, please consider supporting the podcast via the website. You will see on the podcast website, support the podcast link, which brings you to the Amazon page. Clicking into Amazon from there, anything you purchase in that shopping trip, a small portion goes to support the podcast, no cost to you. Thank you so much in advance. You know, one thing I just want to remind you of, next weekend, May 19th, Saturday, is the Spirit Wellness Connection event that is happening at the Radisson Hotel here in Duluth. check it out. Amazing speakers. Come join the live podcast that we're doing there. Tickets are available on the website, spiritwellnessconnection.com, also at the door. $7 gets you in for the day, and you can listen to episode 23 if you want to hear more about the event. Episode 23 is an interview with the folks who put this whole event together. Definitely check it out. Love to see you there. Come on over and say hello. Please share the podcast with anybody who might be interested. If you want to make sure that you don't miss any episodes, head on over to the wellnessrenpodcast.com site. You're going to see an email sign up. We just shoot you a really quick email with the topic and a little bit of information about it and a link that brings you right to the podcast. Easy peasy. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us. Here is to you finding the pieces that fit your health puzzle.